Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. A very happy Thanksgiving to all of you. This is Wednesday, November 27th, and I want to wish everybody a very happy Thanksgiving holiday. Today, we're going to be catching up with our good friend Frank Burke, and we're going to be looking back at this great American holiday called Thanksgiving. It is really the most original of all the American holidays. I mean, you know, we celebrate things in the United States that other people celebrate, like Christmas or some of the, you know, all of the Judeo-Christian holidays. We obviously have Independence Day. We have things like that. But other countries have holidays like that. They have Independence Day. They celebrate special days for their history and their customs. But no country does Thanksgiving Day. And that is something that I learned when I came to the United States many years ago. So we'll be talking to Frank about the history of the holiday, what the holiday means to him, some of his impressions over the years, maybe a favorite Thanksgiving memory that he has. And you know, Frank is a great reader. He's a man who specializes in communications. So we'll be talking about some of his favorite books, maybe some of his poetry, and he is going to do later on, he's going to recite for us a poem of Thanksgiving. So we have a special Thanksgiving message for all of you today, and hopefully you have a wonderful day with your family. My book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, yeah, you can get the book at the Amazon, print, or Kindle, or you can go to our website, Cubanos in Wisconsin, and get yourself a copy of the book. You will find in the book our first Thanksgiving in the United States. And as I mentioned, I had no idea of what Thanksgiving was before I came to the United States. Had no idea whatsoever what it was or the history. So for me, it was the beginning of a whole new holiday, and of course a holiday that I have enjoyed and celebrated many more times. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Frank right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let me say happy Thanksgiving to Frank Burke up in Wisconsin. How are you, Frank?
Well, thanks, and happy Thanksgiving to you and the family and all the listeners, Silvio.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. The same to you. How is the weather up in Wisconsin?
Today, it's the sun is out so far. It's cold and bracing. It's been in the high 20s, low 30s. We have just a little bit of a dusting of snow, but nothing in the forecast that looks too terrible. I'm afraid it's the East is getting it worse.
Yes, you're exactly right. Our friends in the East Coast are really getting it. You know, it's funny how things change, or maybe they don't change. But I was looking at On This Day in History, and back in 1708, I think it was. So that's almost 300. Yeah, it is 300 years ago. They were getting a terrible storm in England. I mean, a terrible winter storm. And I kept thinking to myself, wonder if anybody blamed it on global warming.
Well, you know, you bring up something fascinating, and that's years ago, I read a thing from the BBC Weather Service, And someone had written in and said, you know, in London, the chance of snow, even a flurry, is like once every 10 years. We don't get these big storms. What about all this stuff with Charles Dickens and the Christmas Carol and the snow? And they answered, and they said that from the 1600s until 1850, Northern Europe was experiencing something called the Little Ice Age. And indeed, those winters were extremely cold. There was a lot of snow. And yeah, Dickens was right on. So.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Frank, because I was watching a documentary, or not the whole thing, but just a little bit, of the pilgrims landing in well, what became known as Plymouth Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And when they landed, that would have been 1620, that was exactly what they ran into. They ran into a very cold and unusually long winter because North America, I guess the entire world at that time, was having a little bit of an ice age or mini ice age where the winters were longer, the temperatures were colder, and they had a very tough time. I mean, that was not a winter they were ready for. And it's just amazing to me how they survived, Frank. You know, what kind of survival instincts these people must have had 400 years ago. I mean, we complain today about, you know, some of the temperatures and the weather and stuff like that. And you know, it does impact us, obviously, today. But, I mean, compared to what they had to work with back then, you know, we have nothing to complain about, Frank.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's what you expect, and those people lived in a time when even in England, you had to do things for yourself. If you wanted to be warm, you had to chop the wood. You know, you had to lay in a stock of food for the winter because it wasn't right out there for you. Nobody was going to give it to you. And I think that was in good, kept them in good stead, but it was much worse than they expected. That is a fact.
Yeah, and I think that it was probably the ability to survive and the ability to you know, just to meet every day head on and know that you were totally on your own, that had to be so valuable to them when they got to the new world. And, you know, I was also thinking of the contrast with the Spanish explorers who settled, let's say, what we call Latin America. The first contrast is that, of course, the temperatures were much warmer, so you didn't have the winter. You had other adversarial things, but certainly not the climate was not as bad. They did have hurricanes and stuff like that, but not freezing temperatures. But the other thing that really struck me, Frank, was that much of Latin America was initially, for at least the first 100 years or so, settled primarily by men who were basically soldiers, who would, mm-hmm. you know, come over to occupy or to settle and in some cases literally fight their way through Mexico or Central America or eventually Peru and so on. Whereas with the United States, from the very beginning, there were women who landed. I mean, there were women who came in the Mayflower and so on. So I think that to me always seems like a huge difference between how the United States was settled and how Latin America was settled.
I think you're right. I think very much so because, you know, maybe the compromise between the two was Virginia, which was the landing there was 1607. And there were a number of people in that company who considered themselves, quote, gentlemen, and they didn't want to work. So they had a very hard time of it. And they finally got told, hey, you're not going to work. You're not going to eat. And so they became converts, so to speak. But the reality was, you know, then as now, there were a lot of promises made. A lot of people came over thinking, okay, especially in that Virginia group, there's gold here. We're going to dig for the gold. And that they would go back rich. Well, you know, gold mines are few and far between.
Yeah, certainly not in Virginia. Maybe
no.
in California later, but not in that part. Well,
right.
We want to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving and what it means. For me personally, Thanksgiving was something totally brand new. I mean, the whole idea of a day for giving thanks was something completely new. I had no idea that such a holiday existed. So when we first came here, it was like, okay, so what do we do today? We have a meal and we give thanks. Now, to be honest, we had a lot to be thankful for. So I guess we understood that part of the holiday. But the turkey is not something that we ate in Cuba. That's not a dish that people eat. In much of the Spanish-speaking world, they eat chicken, but they don't really eat turkey. For some reason, it's not a favorite dish, but it was up here. So all of those customs were brand new to me, Frank. And I, you know, I really, after a while, I said, this is a neat holiday. You know, this is really something that this new adopted country of mine has taught me. And for me, the biggest thing, and it's kind of silly, but the biggest thing is I couldn't figure out why they called it a turkey. I mean, it was a bird from Wisconsin, so why would they call it a turkey? And I just couldn't figure it out, you know. And
That's pretty logical.
Yeah, until you know, I'm thinking turkey's a country, right? So why are they calling this bird a turkey, you know? I mean, they don't call other birds Panama or, you know, Denmark, you know, yet they call this guy a turkey. And then years later, I was talking to an English teacher in school, and I said to this lady, look, ma'am, stupid question, but why do they call this bird a turkey? And she explained to me that there was a custom in England, in old England, that when something was really ugly or odd or somehow unusual, it would be called turkey. And that's how this bird, you know, the turkey is not exactly you know, a very handsome bird, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And they call it a turkey. But it took me, I mean, at first, that was my first question. Why do they call this guy a turkey? You know, he's from a Wisconsin farm.
Oh, that's great. And very logical. That's the way kids think. And that's priceless. Yes. Well, you know, it's funny because, as I'm sure you know, Benjamin Franklin, probably the wisest of the founding fathers, wanted the wild turkey as the symbol of the country, as opposed to the eagle, because he felt that the turkey was a more beneficent bird. It had sustained the pilgrims. It was not an aggressive, predatory type bird. It was interested in peace. And so the turkey almost made it as our national bird.
Well, the turkey may be more of a populist bird. The eagle is so regal, if you know what I mean. The eagle is such a magnificent bird. I mean, you kind of associate eagles with, you know, the cream of the crop. And, you know, a lot of the people who settled the country were people who weren't necessarily the cream of the crop. I mean, in the sense that they were not royalty.
That's for sure.
I mean, they were people who were coming here to work and all of that. Well, Frank, one of the things that I love about Thanksgiving is all the traditions, and I thought maybe you could share with us, if you have a favorite Thanksgiving, share that with us. And I know you read a great deal, and maybe you can tell us about some of the stuff that you like to read. And I know you've got a poem that you would like to recite as well. So do you have any favorite Thanksgiving memory, or if not a favorite, something that stands out?
Well, I have one memory from when I was a child, and then another that I think is my favorite. And when I was a child, you know, our house was rather small, and one of many, just like it, you know, wood frame house with a driveway in between, and the common section of Forest Hills, New York, not the rich section. And I can remember as a young child being in the kitchen while my mother was cooking dinner, and it was just steaming hot. There was the potatoes and the turkey, and just hot as it could possibly be. And she reached over and opened the storm window, and there was just this wonderful rush of cool air because, you know, nobody opened the windows in November. And that was just a very great vignette memory of mine. But I think my favorite one occurred fairly recently in 2006. And we restored an old farmhouse, nothing fancy, just a very old, plain Wisconsin farmhouse in the western part of the state in the hilly region. And it's very much Currier and Ives country, and we were all out there for Thanksgiving. And the night, now, we have for many years had border collies, typically two dogs, who are border collies. We just have always loved the breed. And we're there, and suddenly our son arrived, and it was snowy, it was night, it was a real scene, as I say, out of Currier and Ives. And he came in and he said, "Well, who's the other dog? What other dog?" Well, sure enough, a large border collie had found our house and come up on the porch. And we looked out. The poor guy was kind of thin. So he obviously, you know, didn't have a collar on. So we fed him, and he stayed there. And the next day, we fed him again on Thanksgiving Day. And the area is heavily Amish, so the day after Thanksgiving, I took them around to all the different farms to see if someone had lost them. And nobody, you know, no, they said they'd seen him on the road, but no, he wasn't anybody's dog. So I took him to our local vet, who's the animal control officer. She's an older lady, Dr. Birch, and she is to animals what Mother Teresa was to people. And she said, "I don't think we're going to find, you know, anybody's going to show up and claim him. I think he was dumped." So we said, "Well, okay, what's the period?" "Well, he has to be kept for a week. She'll give him all his shots." And we said, "Okay, then we'll adopt him." So we did. And we had him until 2012. We had him for 6 wonderful years before the poor guy passed away. He'd had a real tough time. He was deaf, needed some dental work. Cause I wanted to name him Turkey, but my wife insisted on Rex. And I have his picture right here. I'm looking at it on my desk as I'm talking to you. But it was a wonderful Thanksgiving kind of event, and if I could run a little commercial here, I'd say to your listeners, if you want to do something nice for Thanksgiving, go rescue an animal, rescue a dog or a cat. It will repay you tremendously, and it's a great way of expressing thanks.
Yeah. Now, this kind of collie that you're talking about, this is Lassie, right? The Lassie collie?
No, Lassie... Lassie's a standard. This is a border collie. They're a bit smaller. They're black and white, generally. Some of them are brown and white. And if you recall the movie Babe about the pig.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The dogs in that were border collies. They're considered the smartest breed of all dogs, and they are. Don't ever have a dog smarter than you. You know that if the dog loves you, it really loves you. So.
Well, the good news about having a dog smarter than you is that it'll probably keep you out of trouble.
I think it, yes, indeed. Very much so.
It'll kind of let you know that you're maybe heading down the wrong path or something. It'll bark at you. It'll kind of remind you that you're off the right path. But another thing that you like to do, Frank, is read. And I know you must have some favorite poetry or phrases or books about Thanksgiving. And why don't you share some of that with us? And you have a poem, I believe, too, that you would like to share with us.
Okay, and I think I better abridge it because it goes on a little ways. But of course, the first inkling of Thanksgiving, other than the Pilgrims, comes from the George Washington Proclamation of a Day of Thanksgiving for the United States, for our deliverance as a country. And then Abraham Lincoln, there are our two greatest presidents, of course, established it as a national holiday. And most of the literature of Thanksgiving, here and there, you'll find a story or something that deals particularly with it. But a lot of the literature is actually just part of a memoir. I can't recall which one it was, but years ago I remember reading about Thanksgiving in, I think, the Solomon Islands in World War II, and it was just part of a soldier's letters talking about how they celebrated the holiday. So you find that. Nathaniel Hawthorne wrote a story about it that's kind of, it's almost a ghost story and very morbid. I wouldn't bother you with that. But I think the probably the ultimate Thanksgiving story, and by the way, in terms of books, there's one this year by Rush Limbaugh called Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims. I haven't read it, but it's a very big seller, and I give him a lot of credit for writing a book gauged toward children. So this, if you think about Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving of the mind's eye, if you will, it's probably best effected in a poem by a woman named Lydia Maria Child, who lived from 1802 to 1880. And the official title is The New England Boy's Song About Thanksgiving Day. And it has a kind of cadence to it that's almost like a horse moving, which is very appropriate. You probably all know some of it, and you know the first line, over the river and through the wood. One thing I would say by way of instruction, because you some of the terms in old poems are obsolete, she makes reference to a dapple gray. That's a horse. that's the color of the horse. So wow. Here is Lydia Marie Child's poem, which symbolizes Thanksgiving, I think, to all of us. Over the river and through the wood to grandfather's house we go. The horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through the white and drifted snow. Over the river and through the wood to grandfather's house away. We would not stop for doll or top, for 'tis Thanksgiving Day. Over the river and through the wood, oh, how the wind does blow. It stings the toes and bites the nose as over the ground we go. Over the river and through the wood, with a clear blue winter sky, the dogs do bark, the children hark, as we go jingling by. Over the river and through the wood, to have a first-rate play, hear the bells ring, ting-a-ling-ding, hurrah for Thanksgiving Day. Over the river and through the wood, trot fast, my dapple gray, spring over the ground like a hunting hound, for 'tis Thanksgiving Day. Over the river and through the wood, and straight to the barnyard gate, we seem to go extremely slow. It is so hard to wait. Over the river and through the wood, old Jowler hears our bells. He shakes his paw with a loud bow-wow, and thus the news he tells. Over the river and through the wood, when grandmother sees us come, she will say, oh dear, the children are here. Bring a pie for everyone. Over the river and through the wood, now grandmother's cap I spy. Hurrah for the fun. Is the pudding done? Hurrah for the pumpkin pie. There we are.
Excellent. Excellent. Great. I mean, I can, as you were reading it, I could see the picture. It really is a very interesting, especially the grandmother picture and the pies and all of that. But when, I'm not sure about the answer to this. Maybe you know the answer. But when did families actually start taking the whole day off? In other words, when did it actually become a day without work, as it is now? You know, you have businesses closed. Well, some businesses closed. I understand some people are opening. But I mean, it's kind of gone a little nutty now with the Friday after. But I mean, most businesses close that day. And although I think some of the convenience stores are open, but I guess for people who forget to buy milk or something and they have to rush over to 7-Eleven and buy milk or whatever. But when, as far as you know, when did we actually have the holidays so that the businesses would close and people would actually travel like you're reading in this poem? Because it seems to me when it was a proclamation by President Lincoln or President Washington, it was just that, a proclamation and a day to give thanks, but not necessarily what it became in the 20th century. Do you understand what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I would say it probably happened like Memorial Day, a little bit at a time. And My guess would be, and this is only a guess, that one of the things that really institutionalized it was the Second World War. And the fact that, you know, when people start thinking about praying, as was said, there are no atheists in foxholes. When times are really tough, I think people start thinking about the spiritual aspect. And perhaps the most iconic Thanksgiving picture is the one by Norman Rockwell, which was one of a series of four based on the four freedoms. And for freedom from want, he showed a Thanksgiving dinner. The grandmother bringing in the beautiful brown turkey, the grandfather there ready to carve it, the other kids around and people around the table. So I think that that's one of the things that really brought it out. But I know it was celebrated earlier than that, that after Lincoln's proclamation, a lot of people did celebrate it or took the day off or were given the day off. I know in my family, it went back through the 1900s.
Interesting. The Lincoln Proclamation is from 1863, at least the one that I saw. Maybe there are others.
Right.
Which, of course, is the same year of the Gettysburg Address. So that's two big two big ones there for President Lincoln. And then, as I also read, in 1941, now this would have been literally a couple of weeks before the attack on Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt created the fourth or the last Thursday of the month of November as the official holiday. So it goes back to 1941, obviously before World War II started, but at least this is what I've been able to dig up with some of my own research, 1941, and then before that, 1863. And there are other presidential proclamations. It's almost become an annual thing now where every president has a proclamation. I found, in going back and reading some of them, one of my favorite ones was from 1945, President Truman. And that, of course, came after the end of World War II. So that was really the first Thanksgiving after World War II, which must have been, you know, kind of a good news, bad news thing. On one hand, the war was over, but on the other hand, there were probably a lot of empty chairs on the table because of the casualties. So that was one that I liked. President Reagan also has a couple of nice ones. President Bush had a very nice one in 2001 after 9/11. So these proclamations are there, and they're really easy to find on the internet. Just put Thanksgiving presidential proclamations, and they all come up. Well, Frank, I want to thank you so much. First of all, thanks for your friendship, and thanks for joining us today and being a part of this. That we hope to make it an annual tradition where we do where you get to do a reading, so you can start thinking about next year.
I'll start looking, and
planning next year. Yeah, next year's reading, but I want to wish you and your family a very happy Thanksgiving, and we'll reconnect after that. But have a wonderful day and a wonderful week, and my very best to you, Frank.
Well, and likewise to you, your family, and all our listeners, and think about all the people who have the bittersweet memories of maybe having lost someone, and that's one of the things that makes the holidays hard. But they should be in our prayers. So many thanks,
right,
and God bless.
That's exactly right. Frank Burke, thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.
All right. So, well, we're going to take a break. No, we're not going to take a break. We're going to end it. We're going to end it right here. But I do want to wish everybody a very, very happy Thanksgiving with you and your family. As Frank was saying, this is a day to celebrate a lot of things. We give thanks. We remember, of course, some people who may not be with us anymore. That is always a difficult part of the Thanksgiving holiday. But we hope you have a good one here in the Dallas area, of course. We not only have a Thanksgiving holiday, but it's a tradition now to play a football game in the afternoon. So a lot of families have their dinner and then they watch the game, or the other way around. They watch the game and they eat whatever. Football has now become a big part of our over Thanksgiving here in the Dallas area. And I have to confess that I get into it, okay? I get into it as a Cowboys fan. We get into that. But anyway, happy Thanksgiving to all of you. I want to thank all the readers of American Thinker, all the readers of my blog. I've been also posting some things at Babaloo this year. Thank you very much for reading. And most of all, thanks to all of you. We've had a great year, a lot of listeners. I want to thank all of you for listening to our program over the year. It's been a great pleasure bringing you the show, and we hope to do a lot more as the years go by. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody, and we'll talk to you later. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday.